I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 4:02 p.m. We're in Belch Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, May 1st, 2024. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senators Dunbar and Bishop are up in the Resources Committee. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Mary Gwen Kawakami, and our LIO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. Today, we have many items on our agenda. First up is House Bill 237, Temporary Permit for Lapsed Nurse License. Following that will be House Bill 97, Self-Storage Units, Liens, Sales, followed by House Bill 29, Insurance Discrimination. House Bills 226 and 285 will not be heard today. House Bill 309, Delegation of Routine Optometry Services, and then, finally, House Bill 254, Blocking Pornography to Minors. First up, House Bill 237. This is the first hearing on this bill. With us to present the bill, we have staff to the Honorable Representative Mike Prox, Riley Nye. Mr. Nye, please come forward. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, my name is Riley Nye, staff to Representative Prox. Thank you for hearing House Bill 237, Temporary Permits for Nurses with Lapsed Licenses, which is an act relating to temporary permits with lapsed licenses. HB 237 amends AS 0868-210, which is the temporary permits statutes, to allow the Board of Nursing to issue a temporary permit to a person applying for reinstatement of a lapsed license as long as the person meets the same requirements as a person applying for license by examination. A person with a lapsed Alaska nursing license is a person that has met all of Alaska's nursing license requirements back when they first applied. Those seeking license reinstatements go through the same licensing steps as a person applying for an Alaska nursing license for the first time through the license by examination process as provided by AS 0868-210B. For this reason, it poses no greater risk to the public to issue a temporary permit to practice to a person seeking license reinstatement than it is to issue a temporary permit to a person applying for an Alaska nursing license for the first time. The public interest in having more nurses actively practicing the profession in Alaska is served by issuing a temporary permit to practice in either case. There is broad consensus that Alaskans are currently suffering the consequences of a shortage of actively practicing nurses, so I encourage passage of HB 237 as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nye. Are there any questions for Mr. Nye, staff to Representative Prox? Seeing and hearing none, I would like to call up Ms. Robb, if I could, just to ask a couple of questions about how this process would work. Director Robb, welcome again to Senate Labor and Commerce. I'm wondering, could you just give us a narrative of how a nurse with a lapsed license would experience this process? What would their experience be like if they wanted to return to work after their license had lapsed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sylvan Robb, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. To the chair, so for a nurse whose license has lapsed, this technical fix that's provided in HB 237 would allow them to get a temporary license while we are awaiting the receipt of the necessary documentation to issue them, to reinstate their permanent license. And so it would be similar to other applications. You know, a person submits the form that the department has created, pays the fee, and then goes about getting the rest of the required documentation turned in. And so this just allows that once we have received a subset of that required documentation that the board has deemed acceptable, then that person can obtain the temporary license and get to work while we wait for some of those other pieces to trickle in. And Mr. Chair, sometimes that can take some time because We require that the documentation be received from directly from either the institution, from an employer, and you know, they may not always make it their top priority to get those documents sent off to the state.
Very good. And is this something that a nurse could do through through a licensing portal through the division? Is it something that they could just engage with online to make some kind of declarative statement that says, hey, I'd like to work at being a nurse again? The division has record of them being a nurse before, presumably. Could it just be as easy as that?
Mr. Chair, so it is relatively easy. All of our nursing applications are available online. So they, as I mentioned, they do need to submit the application to have their license reinstated, and because there are certain things that the board is looking for, and there are requirements to ensure that they have gotten continuing education recently or that they've been practicing to make sure that they're prepared to provide those services to Alaskans in a safe manner.
Okay, great. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside for future consideration at a meeting very soon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up on our agenda is House Bill 97 by Representative Mike Prox. This is the third hearing on this piece of legislation. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee first heard the bill on April 8th and then on the 24th of just last month. Feels like yesterday. During those hearings, we had a presentation of the bill and then took invited and public testimony. During our last hearing on the bill, the committee adopted CS version /R as the working document. It is my intention today to look to the will of the committee. But first, I wondered if I could just ask Mr. Eric, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on your last name. Just a couple of questions, and then we'll... Mr. Cordero, thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Cordero, thanks for being here today. I had one question regarding the bottom of page 2 about what happens after a default and the definition of default in the definition section is pretty broad. So could you, from an experience of a renter of a unit, could you say kind of what someone's experience would be if they rented a storage unit and then at what point in time could the owner of that storage unit deny them access to their property that is within the unit?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Eric Cordero, staff to Representative Prox. And I'm sorry, I didn't have my notes in here, but on the sectional, just one second, Mr. Chairman.
No worries.
So my understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that after the first notice, they may deny until they receive payment, but they cannot dispose of the property or sell the property until after the second notice. So that would be it. And it's similar to a long-term laws are, of course, slightly different because you're dealing with someone's home. But in this case, my understanding of the bill is that after the first default, they can deny access. And then if they don't comply 20 days later, then they can dispose of the property based on the guidelines set on the bill.
Very good. And just for reminders, that would be if someone is 10 days late for paying?
That's the first notice. However, this is a guideline. A storage facility owner can actually wait longer than that if they so wish, mm-hmm. which is one of the concerns that a storage facility owner had, saying, hey, we want to do more than that. They can do it. They're not prohibited from doing it.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 97, version 33L-0392/Robert from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate CS for HB 97 version /R is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record, it's 4:15 now in Belchroom 105. Up next is House Bill 29, Insurance Discrimination. We first heard this bill on April 24th. We had a presentation of the bill. Today, it is my intention to take public testimony, consider adoption of a proposed amendment, and look to the will of the committee. With that, I will open public testimony on House Bill 29. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Is there anyone online that wishes to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I will close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion? For members' resource, the division director of the Division of Insurance, Lori Wing-Hire, is with us today. Thank you, Madam Director, for being with us. Do members have any questions for Director Wing-Hire? Seeing none, Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee adopt amendment to HB 29 labeled UA1. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object for purposes of explanation. My staff, Conrad Jackson, will explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and to the Labor and Commerce Committee, U.A.1, just really an oversight. During our last hearing, the mention of all elected officials in Alaska being covered by the bill triggered us to look at who was named, and the congressional delegation was not. Seems appropriate that those individuals should be covered by this legislation. That's all that U.A.1 does.
Very well. With that explanation, I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to Amendment U.A.1? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment U.A.1 is adopted. Is there further committee discussion on the underlying bill? Seeing and hearing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill 29, version 33, L, Sugar 0272, / U, A, Apple, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 29 by Representative McCabe, as amended, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. Back on the record at 4:20. Now we're in Belts Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building. The next bill on our agenda is House Bill 309, Delegation of Routine Optometry Services. With us today, we have staff to the Honorable Representative Justin Ruffridge, James Sexton, here to present the bill. This is the first hearing on House Bill 309, and if Mr. Sexton would please join us here at the table to present the bill, that would be most excellent. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman. For the record, Bud Sexton, you may also call me James. Happy to be here today, and thank you again for the opportunity to discuss House Bill 309. House Bill 309 is dealing with optometry practices, and we do also, as I'm have invited testifiers, doctors who are available online who can expand upon this presentation. Currently, and a few years ago, optometry did a review of their practices, and they determined that they did not have current statutory language allowing them to be able to delegate routine tasks. For anyone that has been to an eye doctor appointment, for instance, all those tasks that the assistants typically do, a lot of automation, recording of information and such, those are the type of routine tasks that we're referring to. And so they learned they did not have it in statute, and we'll go over other professions that actually do. So they embarked upon this effort, of which you see today as a part of House Bill 309. So many organizations and professions actually in Alaska already have delegation of authority responsibility. And you can see the list there in front of you. And when they were handing out the delegation responsibilities, for one reason or another, optometry was not listed. So you can see that medical doctors, osteopathic, physician assistants, podiatry, dental, veterinary, pharmacy, chiropractic, and also ophthalmology, ophthalmology 08.64.106. So all of these were granted through their respective boards the ability to delegate routine type of tasks. These are just a list of some partial tasks that we're talking about. Medication, again, the automation, blood pressure screenings, lots of different types of automation, again, that you would have the optometrist actually come to read the these results when they come into the room. Nothing in this bill absolves the optometrist of any of their responsibilities, but just gives the ability for them to delegate these tasks. So why are they going? Again, because it's not in statutory language. And also we're looking at, you know, to maintain the efficiency and effectiveness of the normal office visits that everyone has come to expect. This bill doesn't have any impact on any billing practices, doesn't increase any cost to patient populations. The goal of this is just to make sure that our patients across Alaska, both rural and remote, receive the appropriate level of care under optometry. The Optometric Association and many others support this legislative approach. Again, it brings it in line with other health-related professions in Alaska, which already in statute receive delegation of responsibility of their tasks. And Chair, that again is a very brief overview of House Bill 309. I'd love to be able, with your indulgence here, from invited testifiers who can expand even further upon the materials.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Sexton. First up for invited testimony, we have Dr. Brad Cross. Dr. Cross, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Hi, through the chair, this is Dr. Bradley Cross. I'm an optometrist in Lexington, Alaska, living in Soldotna, and I serve as the current board chair for the State Board of Examiners in Optometry in Alaska, and I'm presenting this testimony in support of House Bill 309. Optometry is responsible for the majority of primary eye care in the state of Alaska, and as optometrists, we've grown as a profession to accommodate the needs of Alaskans. Both urban, rural, remote eye care necessitates skilled practitioners who have a scope of practice that assures adequate care. We as a profession, as a state board, as a state association, and likely you as state legislators understand and believe that statement. Optometry has shown itself to be economically beneficial to our population, safe, sustainable, and directly accountable to the state board, who in turn is accountable to the legislature. As you have seen, the need for an addition to our state board statutes was discovered during our 2023 regulation project relating to telehealth, and with the help of Representative Ruffage and his staff, a simple yet clear solution has been created. This two-page bill will spell out that an optometrist can delegate ancillary testing to an assistant or a technician. It's much like our colleagues in dentistry, medicine, chiropractic, veterinary medicine, and others have done in the past with their specific statutes, as Mr. Sexton has just presented to you. It is commonplace in optometry practices across the country to utilize technicians in the daily patient flow. This allows for more efficient use of resources within the practice and allows for access to care to not be bottlenecked. And as our population ages in the state and the number of providers is actually decreasing, this would allow optometrists to practice at an efficient level. And that's more important than ever before. With our older population, more diseases are present, which require more imaging, visual field testing, more frequent visits than a younger population would demand. The inclusion of this legislation will ensure that optometrists have the backing of our state statutes to provide a high level of care for the patient base that is in most need of these services. As our training and demographics have changed over time, optometrists are practicing more and more medical eye care. And in order to catch up with the change in the dynamic of how optometry is functioning, it's time to specifically delegate these tasks to optometric technicians in our statutes. On behalf of the Board of Examiners of Optometry, I thank you for taking up this bill and considering its merits, passing it on to become part of our statutes. I'll be happy to stay on for any questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cross. Are there any questions from members? Thanks again for testifying today. Next up is Dr. Damian Delzer. Dr. Delzer, please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you. My name is Damian Delzer, a licensed optometrist and 31-year resident of Fairbanks. Chair Bjorkman and distinguished members of the committee, good afternoon and thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of HB 309. I am the president-elect of the Alaska Optometric Association, and I have the privilege of serving as the immediate past chair of the Alaska Board of Examiners in Optometry. I am testifying in full support of HB 309, which is legislation that was requested by the Board of Examiners in Optometry due to a recent research opinion by the Department of Law. The opinion was that the statute needed clarification regarding ongoing delegation of routine pretesting by optometric assistants. Optometry has utilized assistants as standard of care and as an industry standard practice for decades preceding my graduate professional education, and I personally have utilized assistants for the entirety of my over 30-year career in Alaska, as well as previously in the armed forces. Many states recognize this longstanding industry standard, and the use of assistance is a foregone conclusion in the delivery of eye care, not requiring any specific statute language in many states, including other states where I hold licenses, such as North Dakota and Montana. It is an implied practice, much like we have done here for many decades in Alaska. Assistance improve access to all types of medical care, as was earlier presented. Specific Alaska statutes address this across nearly all of these healthcare fields. The utilization of optometric assistance is universal throughout optometric practices in all states, helping to decrease costs and improve patient access. As was mentioned, optometric assistants will often perform routine pretesting tasks under the supervision of the licensed doctor. These tasks include things such as visual acuity, like you might have done at the Department of Motor Vehicles, glasses measurements, documentation of medical issues, current and past, as well as medications, allergies, photography, and other non-invasive tests. Assistants receive nearly all their training on the job under the careful supervision of licensed professionals, as well as seasoned and experienced supervisors. Similar to most trades, as the assistants demonstrate their safety and proficiency, their responsibilities slowly expand while always remaining subject to continuous oversight from the licensed doctor. This thoughtful and simple legislation will provide the statute clarification as recommended by the Department of Law to allow the crafting of regulatory language by the board to carefully regulate this ongoing delegation of safe, supervised, non-invasive assistance for busy practices, which in turn continues to improve access for the residents of Alaska to much-needed eye care. Fortunately, this simple legislation accomplishes this in a manner that it also is recommended by Director Rob, and at no cost to the state nor cost to the patients or their insurers. The Alaska Optometric Association and its membership fully support this legislation and remain grateful to the sponsor, Representative Ruffridge, and to this distinguished committee for this opportunity to promptly address this issue. Thank you for your kind consideration and time this afternoon, and I will remain ready for any questions you may have.
Dr. Delzer, thank you very much. Are there any questions for members? Seeing and hearing none. Next up is Dr. Elizabeth Stevens. Dr. Stevens, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Elizabeth Stevens, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Optometric Association. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of the over 100 optometric physicians who provide the majority of primary eye care statewide in both rural and urban communities alike. The Alaska Optometric Association strongly and enthusiastically supports House Bill 309, which grants the Alaska Board of Examiners and Optometry the authority to draft regulation regarding the delegation of routine optometric services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stevens. Are there any questions from members? Hearing and seeing none, any member comments or discussion? Mr. Sexton, any wrap-up?
Very briefly, just thank you for your consideration of House Bill 309. Appreciate it.
You betcha. All right. With that, we will set House Bill 309 aside for further consideration at a future meeting. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record at 4:33, our last bill of the day is House Bill 254, Block Pornography to Minors, Social Media. This is the first hearing on this bill. We have with us today to present the bill staff to the Honorable Representative Sarah Vance, Robert Ballinger. Please join us at the table. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce, sir. State your name for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Robert Ballinger, staff to Representative Vance. And she apologizes. She's on the floor right now. She would be here.
No worries.
Is the presentation loaded? Okay.
We'll take a brief at ease.
Okay.
Get it set up. back on the record now at 437 here in Bell Street 105. Last bill on our agenda today is House Bill 254, Block Pornography to Minors, Social Media. We introduced Mr. Ballinger, and now we're ready for a presentation. Take it away.
Thank you, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, and thank you, Chair, and thank you for your patience. So this legislation started with as a vision to try to figure out a way to make it where minors would not have access to some of the worst material that's out there on the Internet. Several states have engaged in this process, and so we were able to start with a piece of legislation that other states have passed and have been upheld in court. And so that's the heart, what Representative Vance is looking for. With this is something that is not necessarily partisan. There's a lot of broad support for this. So these are a couple different letters of endorsements that have been presented on this issue. Then there's studies also. So the American Bar Association, American College of Pediatricians, and the National Human Trafficking Hotline, we'll talk about some of the information that they've provided. And so these are studies from broad spectrum about what the impact on kids, on minors who have access to pornography. So the conclusion from American Academy of Pediatricians, so the children suffer from many negative effects due to modern society's exposure and acceptance of pornography. These negative effects include mental disturbance and unrest for the young school-age children, include acting out, violent behavior. American Bar Association, in their study, said exposure to pornography harms children and youth by normalizing sexual violence, creating unrealistic expectations for intimate partners and relationships, and increasing the risk of addiction. And those are just, you know, a synopsis, and they really went into a lot of detail on that. In the study, the intersections between pornography and human trafficking, they went into a lot of details with the connection. So not only the connection with the industry itself recruiting children to participate in the industry, but then also using it as a tool for grooming. And so there, that one comment is, pornography is the driving force behind the international sex trafficking industry. That was from this study. And then this quote seems like a really good one. Traffickers are smart about their recruitment strategies and play on a person's psychological variables or vulnerabilities. Specifically, children and young teens have a specific desire for acceptance, love, recognition, and money, which makes them an easy target. Recruitment strategies often incorporate the use of the Internet. For example, cyber grooming is a form of grooming done online with intent to sexually exploit an individual. A predator no longer must physically lure or kidnap a teen. They are able to sit behind comfort of a keyboard and exploit anyone available online. And so what we want to do is try to set up as many of these barriers from them and provide as much protection as possible. But according to the National Human Trafficking Hotline, their calls are coming from the leading industry, is the pornography industry, where they're getting their calls from. And this is there's an updated version of this presentation. So those were the states that adopted it. Now the states, there are 17 that have now adopted it, since, and that's just from the beginning of this session till now. And there's another 16 states that actually are like Alaska, where it's going through the process right now. There has been we're missing this slide as well, but there has been a lawsuit actually in Louisiana, Utah, and in Texas. The Louisiana and Utah were both dismissed because of lack of standing, but Texas actually was litigated and went all the way through. In fact, recently as yesterday, was to the U.S. Supreme Court. So Texas went to the district court. The district court upheld Texas's law. It's in place today. They appealed it to the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. Supreme Court decided not to take the case, and on a very short opinion, said that the Texas law could stay in place. So currently, this has been litigated, and I know it's a concern. But one of the things that's different about this is specifically the bill itself targets pornography that is obscene material. So obscene material doesn't have the same First Amendment protections that other. In fact, it's taken out of the First Amendment protection if the material is obscene, according to the Miller test. And so because what we're doing here is we're only prohibiting them accessing this material, then you don't have the same First Amendment issues and concerns. This was the states that have, but a lot of these states have actually now passed it. So this is an example of what they have in Louisiana. So now, if you were to try to access this site in Louisiana, you would get a page that would say you need to go through an age verification system. And the age verification system that's required, so in short, what the bill does, the main point of the bill dealing with prohibiting pornography, it says if any site provides pornography, they have to use some sort of commercial and reasonable age verification system. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Most of them use an internet-based system. And the internet-based system can use material that's already available online, or they may request an uploading of an ID. But it doesn't necessarily have to do that if they're able to go through that commercial age verification system and verify your age without the ID. But if they cannot do that, then it'll require an ID. But this is what it'll look like if a person goes to the site. And having went through that, I don't mind going through and doing a sectional analysis of the bill if you'd like me to, or just give you kind of a more overview of how the bill functions. But either way, so in short, essentially now we've got three parts of the bill. One is what we've went through with the age verification for pornography. It's the original bill. And the way it functions, like I said, is it says that if you're a website that has a substantial portion of your material on your website is pornography, and that's defined as more than a third. So more than a third of your material would fit into the definition of pornography, then you have to use a commercially aged verification system in Alaska. And if you don't, then there are fines associated with it. The attorney general can go forward and seek civil penalties if you don't keep up with it. And then the next part of it is it was set up with something that was put on the floor, and it provides for a $100 grant per kid for parents to set up a parental control system, software. That seems I think it's something that probably everybody should have. $100 seems kind of high, but according to the sponsor of the amendment, it says there are some out there that cost that much. But also the fiscal note associated with that, I know probably makes it where this bill is not going to get anywhere. So if this committee decides they like that, we want to try to give it a college try, because Representative Vance's colleagues put that on the bill. But that's just, that wasn't the intent of the legislation originally. And the next part, it provides for a protection for young teens to keep them from setting up and maintaining social media platforms. So if you're under 14, it prohibits you from setting up a platform. If you're 14 or 15, what it does is it sets up you have to get your parents' permission to set up a platform. We actually really like that idea. They took bits and pieces out of the Florida bill to do that. But if this committee does want to move forward with that, and we want to try to do everything we can to honor what was put on the floor, we really probably need to add some more material to that to make it consistent. The way that it's written with this amendment, it uses the same commercial age verification system that would essentially require everybody to verify their age who's getting on social media. And that probably would be too far. So that's one of the things that we'd probably need to amend and make a change, just to make it where we're sure that it would uphold constitutional scrutiny. But I am happy to answer any questions or go through any detail.
Senator Greg Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. So I need a better understanding of how the age verification portal will work.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things we get a lot of questions about through the chair to Senator Greg Jackson. Bob Ballinger represents Vance's office. It is something that is somewhat confusing because it's not something we have done, although the industries have. So it is the same type of system that if somebody is going to gamble online or they're going to have a wine of the month club, that they'll have to go in and prove that they are 21 or over 18 or whatever to make the purchase. And so there are software providers, which is essentially what they're doing right here, or software companies, that's what they do. And so they will collect data from all over the internet. If you're putting your information in, put your birth date in, and they can verify that and verify that you are of that age, then you won't actually have to go through the process of uploading your ID. But you can also upload your ID. And there are several different systems that are made. So it has to be any type of commercially available, you know, commercially accepted that meets the standard AIDS verification method. And if you look on the bottom of page one on the bill, it says, you know, it includes a digitized identification card. So that would be sufficient. Or requiring a person to comply with commercial AIDS verification system that verifies, so this is now to the top of page two, using government issue ID. So that would be, you know, going through the same thing. Or another method that relies on public or private transaction data. And so, you know, if you are going through a site that requires your credit card to be uploaded, then that will probably be enough to satisfy the age. It's not, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience going through these type of sites, but there are a whole bunch of these sites that are available, like companies out there that are doing this. And there are a lot of sites that already are doing the age verification so they can engage in selling products that require a certain age. So with the social media, they are already collecting that data. And so there is a way to do social media without having the same age verification process, because that's one of the things they collect when you sign up is your age. But then they are also constantly pulling data, which by itself, that privacy concern ought to be something we're concerned about with our kids. But they're constantly pulling data. So there's a way to do it without requiring every person to go through that with social media.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Any further questions? We have online as invited testimony Richard Darr. Mr. Darr, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation, location, and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. Richard Darr, National Decency Coalition. I'm the executive director. So, yeah, thanks for having me here today. We certainly support this bill. This bill has great history. It passed in Louisiana in 2022. It survived court challenges. There's up to 17 states that have currently passed this bill. The problem right now is that children typically have access all the time to online pornography. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 1 in 10 sites still remain accessible even when parental controls are in place. According to Covenant Eyes, 39% of parents, only 39% of parents actually utilize filtering software, which leaves 61% of children exposed. All the data that we've seen on first exposure is between the ages of 8 and 12 years old. So the problem is real. This bill has been very successful, has worked really well. We're actually working with Congress members in D.C. right now on a federal bill that's moving pretty well. It's called the Screen Act. It's much like this one. And we actually had the opportunity to meet the CEO of Invoke. That's a group that was asked to do all the age verification in Louisiana when that bill was first passed. And what we learned through data security and how the age verification works is really good and extensive. So what they do is they do an ID upload, then they do a biometric facial scan for a live scan to make sure that the ID matches the person. And that's how they do their age verification process. So there's a lot of different processes, very extensive processes out there that are being used. We're certainly excited about this bill. It's doing really well in states. I'm in Tennessee, and our bill just passed the House and the Senate. It's headed for signatures right now. So it survived court challenges. Texas has been very vigorous on their lawsuits. So they've filed lawsuits against Pornhub and other pornographers for noncompliance. And we do like that there's an AG, Attorney General investigation statute in your bill. I think that's very important as far as the effectiveness of it, which a lot of states have as well. So we're excited about it, and we hope the best, and we hope for all of your votes on this bill. If anyone has any questions, I'm certainly here to do the best I can to answer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Darr. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you very much. Is there any committee discussion? I have a few thoughts about this bill. I think that the underlying bill, as introduced by Representative Vance, is a great idea and a good way to make sure that the only folks that are accessing pornography on the internet are actually adults, and it seems like there are workable solutions in order to do that. I think that The other portions of the bill, which were added on the floor of the other body, they may be great ideas as well. However, we don't have time to thoroughly flesh them out this session in order to get those things done. So as we kind of consider this bill, I think it will be my desire to focus on the possible. And so that's how I'd like to proceed with this bill. Any further comments on House Bill 254? Hearing none, we will set this bill aside for further committee consideration. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Friday, May 3rd. We will hear a number of bills, Senate Bill 225, Occupation Licensing Fees, as well as House Bill 253, Federally Designated Refrigerants, and House Bill 17, Contraceptive Coverage Insurance Medicine Assistance, as well as any other bills that need to be heard under bills previously heard or scheduled. As there is no further business to come before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, we are adjourned at 4:53 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, do we know anything about education? She hasn't said anything yet.